Mitch Lovett steers his banged-up Saab up the driveway of the house he used to live in. The children pile out of the back. Addie, his four-year-old, waves her hands in the air in a musical pantomime. She sings over and over again. London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. Six-year-old Julian crosses his arms and scowls at his father as he steps out of the car. It isn't fair that you made me come home in the middle of Grand Theft Auto. I could have beat Larry. He kicks a soccer ball in the driveway. It hits the garage door and bounces off the hood of the Saab. Mitch catches the ball as it comes down. You need to control your temper. Or would you like a timeout? Even as he asks the question, he feels guilty that he left the kids at the Spicer house the night before because he wanted to spend the night with Dee Wynn. What kind of father is he? Julian must have sensed his doubt. You don't live here. How can you give me a timeout? He grouses. He sits on the ground in protest. You get up, son, says his father. Yes, you get up. You be nice to your daddy, agrees Addie, shaking her fist at her brother. Julian defers to his younger sister. He is, like his father, a great lover of the opposite sex. Now the two of you head upstairs, says Mitch with a wave of his hand. Your mother's waiting. He sees Kathy, the woman he once loved, crack open the front door and gaze out. She smiles gaily, and her eyes glow, but not for Mitch. The kids gallop up the stairs to hug her. I haven't seen you forever, she says, gathering them in her arms until they start to giggle. She attended a conference in Richmond with her fellow shrinks and drove home that morning. Her antenna must be up. You saw us the day before yesterday, says Julian, as he rushes in the house, followed by Addie. Mitch yanks the kids' overnight bags out of the trunk and hefts them up the front steps to the hallway. I know something you don't know, says Kathy, looking at him carefully like he's a specimen under glass. Mitch drops the bags in the front hallway. What would that be? He asks, hesitating. He eyes his ex warily. Oh, come in, she says, dragging him by the arm to the living room. He sits down on the flowered sofa, which had been there since they had purchased it from the decorator at Ethan Allen before the kids were born. Kathy saunters into the kitchen to fetch two cups of coffee and a salted oatmeal cookie, which she must have purchased just for him. What is she up to, he wonders. Usually they go their separate ways until the next visitation. Mitch looks around the room. He is amazed at how things are the same. The same two paintings hang on the wall. In the first, a woman cradles flowers in her arms as she steps out of an orange pickup while a man behind the wheel stares at the bucolic landscape, perhaps to avoid looking at the roadside cross that dominates the foreground. In the second, a Morris Minor is poised to pull out of a country lane into the shadow of an oncoming truck. He and Kathy both love realism of the more edgy variety. They love Art Deco, as evidenced by the clock on the mantel that cost a fortune, and the brass chandelier with the amber floret shades that cost nothing. A friend was about to lower it into the trash in his condo. The house itself was craftsman style, with built-in wood cabinets to either side of the fireplace where Kathy kept the Waterford glasses that they received as wedding presents. He remembers purchasing all these items and how excited they were at the time, especially about the home. Kathy saying, "This is where we are going to raise our children," though they were both anxious since she'd already had two miscarriages. Mitch is checking out a photograph of Bob and Kathy sitting in a Paris cafe on their honeymoon, the Champs-Élysées in the background, when Kathy slips in with her booty balanced on a silver tray. She sets the tray down on the mission-style coffee table, another item they acquire together. He sips the tea and munches the cookie, savoring every crunchy bite. He used to eat a whole package in one day, and Kathy would say, "You'll make yourself fat." But that's not true. Maybe in his 50s, but right now he's still a lady killer. Bronze-skinned, muscular, and curly-haired in the same mysterious Gallic way as his father and grandfather before him, and so on into the misty past.